This hour, our focus is the so-called rules of war and conflict established in the last century that were supposed to keep civilians out of the line of fire. Remember that? The conduct of war was envisioned by so-called state actors playing by the same rules with consequences for nations who violate the rules of war. 100 years ago, there was no rule book when the great powers used the frightening new warfighting technologies of the 20th century at the outset of World War I. That is a reenactment of one of the great naval disasters of all time, the deliberate sinking by a German submarine in 1915 of the British cruise liner, the Lusitania. Almost 1,200 people died. Nearly a century later, the apparent deliberate downing of a civilian jetliner in a combat zone in Ukraine that killed hundreds calls out for the world to once again remember the Lusitania, or to at least remember that the rules of war are apparently one of its modern victims.
The norms and laws that have been built up over centuries to defend civilians in war, sanctified in the Geneva Conventions after the Second World War, are being lost.
David Miliband, president and CEO of the International Rescue Committee, on The Takeaway last Friday. We will talk later this hour about how the abuses of World War I set the stage for the Geneva Convention and our modern rules for protecting civilians during war. But in our century, it seems to be the civilians who are targeted most of all. In Syria, hundreds of thousands of civilians dead. The mounting civilian casualties in Gaza as Israel cries foul about civilians used as human shields. President Obama conceded on Friday that the U.S. has not stuck to the letter of the Geneva Convention in matters of war prisoners.
In the immediate aftermath of 9/11, we did some things that were wrong. We did a whole lot of things that were right, but we tortured some folks. We did some things that were contrary to our values.
President Obama. We begin our coverage of all this with an update on the humanitarian crisis of the moment in Gaza. James Rawley is in Jerusalem, just back from Gaza. He's humanitarian coordinator for the Occupied Palestinian Territory for the United Nations.
We are now looking at a health and humanitarian disaster that is unfolding in front of our eyes. I mean, the situation there is very dire. You know, Gaza is a very small place to begin with, and now 40% of Gaza has been absorbed into a buffer zone, so you have this incredible population density in an area where conflict is taking place throughout the Gaza Strip. There is literally no safe place in Gaza. You know, we have over 1,700 dead Palestinians, 85% of them are civilians, and close to 400 are children. At one point, we were losing a child to the conflict every hour, and we have over 9,000 people that are injured. So places that should be safe, schools, hospitals, homes, and UN facilities, and I do want to talk about that in a moment, have all been damaged or destroyed. And innocent people have been and continue to be killed in them. And just to give you an idea of the magnitude of the what we call the human displacement, the people that are on the move, the figures now are up to almost 500,000. I think 490,000 is the latest figure we have. That's more than 25% of the entire population of Gaza. We just can't keep coping with this type of staggering human displacement.
To recap, we've got 40% displaced in an area that's already among the most dense places in the world, and United Nations facilities are no sanctuary. Does that about size it up?
Yeah, I mean, I think the number to be is more in the range of 30%, about 490,000 out of a population of 1.8 million. But, you know, that's still a staggering statistic. Yeah, and on the protection, when I was in Gaza the last couple of days, a number of people came up to me saying, hey, isn't your job to protect people? And I said, yes, and we are failing at that job. It's really absolutely painful for me to report once again that yesterday another UNRWA facility was hit by the Israeli Defense Force, and we lost 10 Palestinians, including an UNRWA worker that were just standing out inside of the facilities. And the parties, and of course not only the Israelis, but also the de facto authorities, have a responsibility under international human rights law and international humanitarian law to stay away from the civilian population. And these are, you know, 85% of the people that have been killed are civilians. I'd just like to add, John, there's one other disaster. I mentioned quickly the humanitarian disaster that's unfolding. The health disaster in Gaza, I mean, we are really worried. You know, on the one hand, we have this huge increase in demand for emergency health services. I mentioned over 9,000 people that have been injured, and many severely injured. And on the other hand, we have health infrastructure that's been severely damaged. To be precise, one-third of all the hospitals in Gaza have been hit in attacks. And we have six hospitals that are absolutely closed, primary health facilities, and others have been damaged. We have five medical staff that have been killed and dozens who have been injured. And some 40% of the health workers, and this is part of this displacement and the violence, they can't get to work because of the violence or because they're so afraid that their number one priority at this point, perhaps understandably, is with their families. So we have this big increase in demand for emergency health services, and the capacity to respond is much less than it used to be. And just the last thing I'll add to this horror story is we have an almost complete breakdown in water, electricity, and the sanitation infrastructure, which was functioning at a minimal level 4 weeks ago before this conflict. The one and only Gaza power plant has been completely knocked out of commission, and the water and sanitation services are operating at a minimal expression. And we're now hearing, and when I heard this morning, I was staggered, they're now talking about diseases that were eradicated in Gaza in the 1940s, meningitis, even, and a whole series of waterborne diseases that have not been seen in the Gaza Strip in decades.
Talking with James Rawley, Occupied Palestinian Territory Humanitarian Coordinator for the United Nations. Mr. Rawley, before we go, you mentioned that the Israelis are apparently unable to avoid hitting civilian structures and civilians inside Gaza. You mentioned that people in Gaza are asking you at the United Nations, aren't you supposed to protect us? Has Hamas also failed to protect the people of Gaza?
Yes. Yes, they have. And I want to be clear on that. We have denounced Hamas and other de facto forces when they fire missiles or engage in offensive actions close to UN facilities or, for that matter, any facility where there's civilians there. And we have also denounced, and UNRWA itself came out with reports denouncing Hamas because some militant groups, we don't know if it's Hamas, put rockets in three UNRWA schools that were closed. And those rockets were identified by UNRWA staff, and we immediately reported that to the world, including the Israeli authorities. So, yes, Hamas also has its share of blame in this conflict. But the rockets that are severely damaging and killing our schools, you know, recently are actually coming from the Israelis.
But isn't it the case that everybody knows what facilities are civilian and are meant to be sanctuaries?
We have coordinated not once, not 10 times, literally 17 times in many cases. And I myself wrote a letter that was signed by two undersecretary generals over 4 weeks ago to the Israeli Minister of Defense, giving the coordinates of each one of the UN facilities in Gaza. And we update those on a two or three times a week. So I can say categorically that the government of Israel has the coordinates of every UN facility in Gaza. So if a mistake is made, it can't be because we didn't know it was a UN facility. Some other factor was taken into account, and I have no idea what that factor could be.
James Rawley is the Occupied Palestinian Territory Humanitarian Coordinator for the United Nations. Thanks so much, James.
Thank you.
Stepping back now, can conflict in places like Gaza be conducted under any rational set of rules? Look at Syria. Remember the Lusitania, the jetliner in Ukraine. Are the Geneva norms, as David Miliband told us, being thrown out, crumbling in our time? Diane Amen, professor of international law at the University of Georgia School of Law, reminds us that just as humanitarian rules are violated everywhere, doesn't mean they don't apply.
The laws of war or international humanitarian law apply across the globe. There really are no special places. Every country in the world has agreed, obliged itself to obey certain laws, the primary rule being the protection of civilians. But sometimes in very graphic cases like we're seeing now, they appear to violate those laws. But the international system depends first and foremost on the countries themselves. We want individual countries and indeed non-state actors like militia groups to clean up their own dirty laundry. When they don't, there are mechanisms, courts, tribunals, and other ways that the international system attempts to get accountability in those situations. Sometimes it's effective, sometimes it's not.
What about the issue of the Lusitania, which I referred to at the top of the hour, the sinking of the Lusitania, a civilian ship that was brought down by a German U-boat, a submarine? That was really a motivation to establish rules of law during World War I. And here we are with the MH17, the Malaysian airliner shot down over Ukraine. And it appears that that's going to just pass without any consequences, at least in the short term.
Well, I think maybe in the short term is part of the caveat. Law takes a long time. Is it true that we make laws and they're broken? Yes, it is. But I think at times, if you look at things like the war crimes tribunals for Yugoslavia and Rwanda, Sierra Leone, at times we do see some measure of accountability. Unfortunately, it's in the long term.
Would you say there's a black market for humanitarian violations in the sense that people operate in a kind of netherworld and there are occasional consequences, but there's sort of a secret rule book that certain players play with, including the militias you mentioned? And do you think there are any precedents for the civil war in Syria going forward in this century in terms of the protection of civilian populations?
It appears that we can design a system where people will be protected, but we aren't very good about implementing it. One of the issues at stake here, of course, is an issue that precedes the question of war crimes or violations of war, the question of whether you can prevent war or regulate war before it happens. And the mechanism that we've put in place for that is the UN Security Council, and it has trouble doing that when one of its five permanent members has a stake in what's going on.
Diane Amon is professor of international law at the University of Georgia School of Law in Athens, Georgia. Professor, thank you so much.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.